Vikram is a composite. The blockages, the conversations, the doors that closed are real, and they are closing across London now. This is their story. This is about transport infrastructure in one of England's poorest constituencies on official measures, where senior engineers found themselves locked out of the work they were trained to do. The rails needed upgrading, the expertise existed locally, but every application met the same response. There was no money. What Vikram discovered was that the money was never the real issue.
I've been working on London's transport network for over a decade now. Started straight out of college as a trainee signal technician on the underground, worked my way up to senior engineer. My parents ran a corner shop in Hounslow. Always said education was the way forward. They were right, but they couldn't have predicted what I'd learn about how this country actually works. I've got a workshop in my garage where I restore vintage electronics, mostly 1960s radio equipment. There's something satisfying about bringing old circuits back to life, making connections that were broken. I thought infrastructure worked the same way. When Crossrail 2 was first announced, I felt like this was my moment. I'd visited my uncle in Delhi a few years back, saw the metro system he'd helped build there, pristine stations, trains running every 2 minutes, connecting millions of people to work. I came back thinking, we could do this here. We should do this here. London's transport network was straining at the seams, and here was a project that could transform West London, connect my community properly to the rest of the city. I applied to Transport for London for a senior engineering role on Crossrail 2. I had the experience, the qualifications, knew the London network inside and out. The response was polite but clear. They were awaiting Treasury approval for funding and couldn't hire until then. Made sense at the time. Big project, lots of money involved, government processes take time. I could wait. Months passed. The project stayed in limbo. I started looking at other opportunities. Network Rail had been talking about electrification work on suburban lines around Feltham. Upgrading the old diesel routes. Perfect fit for my background. I submitted my application, went through the initial screening. Then came the call. The Department for Transport had paused all non-essential infrastructure spending due to budget constraints. The program was indefinitely delayed. Two rejections, same reason. Starting to see a pattern, but I still believed what they were telling me. Money's tight, public spending under pressure. These things happen. I decided to go political. Contacted my local MP's office about transport investment in West London. Laid out the case, overcrowded trains, aging infrastructure, skilled workers ready to upgrade it all. The constituency office forwarded my concerns to the Department for Transport. 3 weeks later, I got a letter back, a standard template response. Current fiscal pressures require us to prioritise existing commitments over new infrastructure projects. There is no funding. That's what it came down to, every time. Three different institutions, same answer. I accepted it because everyone accepts it. It's the way things work, isn't it? Government's got a budget. Budget's stretched. Some things get funded and some don't. Economics 101. Then I started noticing things that didn't add up. Walking past the old British Rail Training Centre in Feltham one afternoon, I stopped and really looked at it. Building's been locked up for 3 years now. But the car park was full of construction vehicles. Not old rust buckets, proper modern kit. JCBs, concrete mixers, surveying equipment. All just sitting there, unused. I could see through the dusty windows into the workshop. All the training equipment still there. Covered in dust sheets, but intact. Hydraulic lifts, signal testing rigs. Even the old locomotive simulator they used to train drivers. My neighbour Dave works as a track engineer, or did when there was work. Qualified on everything. Safety certifications up to date. 20 years experience. He'd been unemployed for 8 months. Not because he couldn't do the work. Not because the work didn't need doing. Because every rail project he applied for got stuck in the same loop. Awaiting funding approval? Or subject to budget review? Or deferred pending Treasury guidance? I started asking questions. If Dave's got the skills, and the training centre's got the equipment, and the construction vehicles are sitting in the car park doing nothing, and the rails around Felton will desperately need upgrading, what exactly is it that there is no money for? The building exists. The equipment exists. The workers exist. The need exists. That's when it clicked. The government that prints the pound notes was telling me it couldn't find enough pound notes to put Dave back to work in a building it already owned, using equipment it had already bought. The government that minced the coins was saying the cupboard was bare, while skilled engineers sat idle and passengers crammed onto aging trains every morning. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. I could see them with my own eyes. Dave drinking tea in his garden at 11 a.m. because there was no work. The construction vehicles gathering dust because there were no projects. The training center locked up because there was no budget to run courses for jobs that weren't being created because there was no budget to create them. The excuse wasn't a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It's the same logic as a household saying, "We cannot afford it," except a household doesn't issue its own currency. The government does. When my parents saved up to expand the shop, they had to accumulate money from somewhere else. When the government spends money, it creates it. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and people who needed it. I'm still here, still watching, still working on the underground. Keeping the old system running while the new system that should replace it stays locked in treasury meetings. But I understand now what I didn't understand when I started applying for those jobs. This isn't about transport infrastructure. It's about a political choice dressed up as an accounting problem. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. Every time someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare, I think about Dave. And the training center, and those construction vehicles. I think about all the things that exist, right here, ready to be connected. The government chose not to make those connections, then called that choice a financial constraint. It's not just my story, or Dave's story, or even just Feltham's story. It's the story of every place where people and needs exist side by side, while someone with the power to issue currency explains why they can't find enough currency to bring them together. The resources were always there. The decision not to use them was always political.
What Vikram experienced has a name, logical fallacy. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that undermines an argument's logic. The false analogy is one of the most common types. It compares two things that are fundamentally different as though they work the same way. You might compare a goldfish bowl to the ocean because both contain water, but the bowl is a closed system with fixed volume, while the ocean is vast and self-replenishing. Every time someone told Vikram there is no money, they were applying household logic to a currency issuer. Households must find money before they spend it, accumulating wages or borrowing from others. Governments that issue their own currency create money when they spend it. The analogy breaks down immediately, but it's repeated so often that it sounds like common sense. The construction vehicles in that car park, the unemployed track engineer next door, the locked training center with working equipment, these were the proof that the constraint was ideological, not real. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources, people, skills, materials, time. And in Vikram's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Feltham and Heston ranks 101 out of 543 English constituencies on deprivation measures, placing it in decile 2, making it one of England's poorest areas, English Indices of Deprivation 2025, MHCLG. The constituency has 496 registered charities, Charity Commission Register. Total grants received amount to £19.2 million, 360 giving Grant Navi. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics produced by Blocked Britain.